Hello and welcome to a new English edition of my podcast Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikhaus and my guest today is Jonathan Levine from the Jonathan Levine Gallery in New Jersey.
Helium Talk.
Yes, it's that time again.
Are we on the record or off the record?
This is off the record. This is all off the record.
So this is part 8 of my ongoing conversation with Jonathan. I can keep the intro short because you probably know by now who we are and what we call these special shows off the record. And if not, there are 7 more of these talks online, so please feel free to check out our past episodes. One to recommend, Helium Talk number 44. That one is really special. By the way, I want to give a shout out to Squadcast.fm, the guys who developed the platform over which I'm recording these remote chats with guests who can't come down to the studio in Hamburg. Nope, they're not paying me, they're just doing a great job, and that is all I wanted to say. Okay, well, there's something else I need to tell you today. Here we go. Trust me, I did not take this decision lightly. As much as I love doing this podcast, I decided to reduce my output a little. Instead of every week, from now on, I will release a new show only every 2nd week. It has just proven to be too time-consuming to publish one podcast every fucking Tuesday. I'm still doing everything by myself. The recordings, the post-production, the marketing and social media, the scheduling with my guests, and so on. As most of you know, I make my living as an artist, and with the projects and exhibitions at Helium Cowboy, the podcast is pure investment of my time and passion, and money, of course. So until I find a good sponsor to outsource everything but the interviews, unfortunately, I can no longer go on a weekly basis here. Well, okay, it is not as dramatic as it sounds. 2 shows per month are still good, I believe, and I really hope you do understand. As always, let me know what you think in the comments, as a message on Instagram, or by sending a mail to hello@heliumtalk.com. I appreciate you listening and being faithful to this podcast and for being understanding. But for now, have a great day, you all, and enjoy this episode of the Helium Talk special, Off the Record with Jonathan Levine, Part 7.
Helium Talk. Helium
Talk. All right. Where were we?
My name's Passionate Amplifier, and you're Unassuming Skywalker.
Unassuming Skywalker, yeah.
That's funny.
That's the nicknames the people from Squadcast give us. Because we didn't sign in with our names. We were too lazy to fill out the form.
I see.
Okay. But, well, Passionate Amplifier. Is that something that actually, you know, could describe you?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah. I don't even know what an unassuming Skywalker is.
Well, like Luke Skywalker, you're an unassuming Skywalker.
All right. So there's one thing that that you've posted this week, and that is a show reel for a TV show that you are planning.
Well, so yeah, so what I posted a couple days ago on my Facebook page was what's called a sizzle reel. And so basically, and now typically you wouldn't talk about, I've been working on a television show, so an idea for a television show. Mm-hmm. And typically, you know, you wouldn't talk about it, but you'd be out pitching it and blah, blah, blah. But we kind of did that, and so I made it live. I hope I'm making it sense here. So let me start from the beginning. I had this idea about doing this television show, just kind of like based on my experiences and such. And, you know, I've been sort of thinking about it a lot, I guess, because, I mean, it just seemed like it would be really fun to do a TV show, right? And I've been thinking about this for a few years. I just had kind of an idea. My idea was just like, you know, like I was thinking about this for 10 years or maybe even more. My idea was just kind of like, hey, it'd be kind of cool to be able to share my experiences that I have when I travel in the arts, you know, because I have these really cool experiences all the time, meet all these really cool people, and I sort of have this insider's look. And so, you know, and I like the idea of being on camera and that sort of thing. And I just thought, I also thought, well, this would be a really cool way. Ultimately, it just seemed like it would be really fun. And also, it was kind of like there wasn't any programming out there about, you know, there's not a lot of cool art programming, and I wanted to make something that was accessible. So my idea was to have this kind of cross between this show with Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown, and this other show, American Pickers, which is this show where these two guys go around. They have like a store where they sell like motorcycle parts and like, you know, vintage stuff like car, you know, automobile signs and tin toys. And they basically travel all over the country and sometimes internationally, and they go to these people who collect this stuff and they buy it off of them and then they resell it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like super accessible that like any average person could just like watch and like, and the guys are like these kind of working class guys that are just really relatable. And it's a really interesting show because they'll tell you the history of like whatever it is. They're like, they're called pickers because they're picking through like, you know, collections and such. But, you know, like maybe like Mike, the one of the main guys, he's really into like motorcycle stuff, like Harley stuff, you know, and really early motorcycle stuff, like, you know, 40s, 50s. And they'll be like, this was the tank that was on this particular bike. And they'll give you the whole history of that particular model. Or they'll go and buy a car and they'll talk about the history of that car. Or it'll be something like they'll file a cookie jar and it'll be like a McCoy, which is a company, and they'll talk about mm-hmm. the history of this company. So it's like their name of their company, their store is called Antique Archaeology. So they're almost like these archaeologists of like pop culture stuff, mm-hmm. but like older stuff. Anyway, I love that show and I like it because it's really interesting and it's really accessible and they're just like regular guys and it's funny. And so I was like, you know, I'd like to do a show like this where I share my experiences in the same way, where basically the idea was to, we kind of developed the idea. And what we came up with was, I would go visit an artist. We'd learn about who they were, what their backstory was, because most artists are actually very interesting. They have really interesting stories, you know, what their artwork is about, what sort of, you know, influences them, and just like what their daily life is, like, you know, what they do every day. Some of them, like, depending where they live, like maybe they just go down to the local coffee shop and they have a coffee and they like know the barista and they have a chat, or they like, they take me to like their favorite local taco place, you know, or whatever it is, wherever they live. If it was you, you might be like, I'm going to take you to my favorite place on the street where we can get a steak and French fries. Mm-hmm. That's kind of something I've eaten in Germany on the street, steak and fries. That's not something you would eat here.
That's very French. It's French, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I remember eating that in Frankfurt, mm-hmm. and it was so good. And I ate it on the street, and I was like, God, this is so good. I ate it a whole bunch of times. But or, you know, I'd be like, Jörg, where are we going? You're like, take me to find your favorite schnitzel. You know, it's not like you eat schnitzel here. So it's, you know, so that was the idea. And like, I found these guys who have a small production company. We developed the idea. We developed a pitch, which is like the written version of like a whole bunch of different episodes that we thought mm-hmm. would be interesting. And then we decided we were going to, so we had to shoot one. We had to shoot a whole episode. So this is how oftentimes when they're making non-scripted television or scripted television, they'll come up with a pitch. They'll be like, this is what our show is going to be about. And here are some sample episodes. And then they shoot a sizzle reel. So basically what they'll do is, not always like this, but we went in and we shot a whole episode, but then we just take, we make a 3 or 2 minute version, a 2 minute kind of commercial of that show, almost like it exists, and we talk about that episode. And you send that out to networks, etc., to get them to pick it up. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. And the first episode we shot was with Shag. And what we did was, it was interesting because I had never shot a television show. I'd been on camera a few times, you know, here and there, you know, in a very, like, in my office where somebody was shooting me for a film or for some webcast or something like that, you know. And I know I'm bouncing around a little bit here trying to talk about this, so hopefully it makes sense to the listeners what I'm saying. So the first episode we shot with Shag, and so I flew out to Los Angeles, and I was there. The name of the company I work with was called A Standard Films. It's this guy, Mike Hatchett, who is pretty well known in the snowboarding scene in the 90s. He used to like be like the most well-known like snowboarding like filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of legendary. And then this other guy who's part of the team, who was a writer, is named Steve Barlotti. And he's a super cool dude. They're both from like San Diego. Steve Barlotti's like this very well-known writer in the surfing world. And he used to be the editor of Surf Magazine. And he works on a variety of projects. Really great dude. And so they helped me develop this whole concept. So I flew out there, and basically shooting this episode took at least 3 days. And that's not very much, actually. But we spent 3 days shooting with Shag. And first we, and the team was, there was two cameramen, a sound guy, a lighting guy.
So like a big production already.
Right. It was like six or seven people, mm-hmm. you know, small, you know. And, you know, these days were really long. You're up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You're shooting at, hopefully they're getting, you're shooting at eight, and then you're going to like six, seven, 8 o'clock at night, and you got to pack up, and then you're eating and you're falling asleep and you do it again. It's quite exhausting, mm-hmm. actually. And, you know, you have to kind of, the idea was for my personality to some extent carry the show, my relationships with these people to kind of carry the show. That was the hope. So we go out to visit Shag, who's my good friend. He lives in this amazing house in Southern California that's an amazing mid-century modern home. And he's got all this amazing like mid-century furniture and this great tiki bar collection, and it looks like his house. Mm-hmm. His house, I mean, it looks like his paintings. His house looks like his paintings, you know. He like lives, the life that you see in his paintings is actually the life he's kind of living.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we went and visited him. We talked about his life, and he's an interesting guy because he grew up in Hawaii until he was like 10, and he's like one of eight siblings. He has an identical twin brother, and his family, they grew up Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of talked about that. You know, we talked about, you know, how he became a painter, how he loved all things like, you know, the things he loved in his painting, which is like mid-century modern design, architecture, tiki culture, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We talked about how he made the work. And then we walked through his house and we talked about his collection. He has this great collection of art and tiki mugs and things like that. And we talked about how we had the show coming up, because I've done like five or six solo shows with him. You know, I've known him for, I don't know, over 15 years. I don't even know how long I've known him. Like 20 years, I should say.
Yeah, he's pretty present on your website too.
I mean, yeah.
Regarding the shows.
And, you know, and so he was getting ready for this show, and he had been away. Flew out to England for like 24 hours and he came back and he was painting, and he passed out and fell through a plate glass window in his living room and cut his jugular vein. And he almost died. Mm-hmm. And he shows up like, you know, at the opening, he's okay, recovers, he finishes the show, and he's got like this Frankenstein, you know, like mm-hmm. stitches across his neck. It's pretty gruesome. So we kind of talked about that. And then, so that was like the first day. And then the second day we flew down. I mean, sorry, we didn't fly down. We drove down to Palm Springs, which is like an hour and a half, mm-hmm. 2 hours from Los Angeles.
Yep.
And Palm Springs is like this famous, back in the 50s and 60s, all those Hollywood stars used to hang out there. And it's filled with all this. Yeah, it's in the desert. And it's filled with all these mid-century modern homes it's famous for. And the sort of the mid-century modern, a lot of designers live there. So he's like the official artist of that town. Like you drive in and there's like all these banners that have Shag stuff on it. He's got two stores, one there in Palm Springs and one in Los Angeles on Melrose. And then he also has this condo there that he totally did up in his own customized stuff. It's like the most amazing like condo with all his cool design and cool furniture. And it's really amazing. So we go down there and we spend... We go to his favorite tiki bar, and we have drinks, and we talk about tiki culture. Then we visit his store, and we look at stuff there. Then we drove around, and we looked at like this really famous building that Elvis had his honeymoon in. And we visited his condo, blah, blah, blah. That was the second day. And then the third day, we went stand-up paddleboarding because he loves to paddleboard. Mm-hmm. And he used to do this all the time, like once a week with Greg Escalante, who was this very influential, you know, gallerist in L.A. who unfortunately has passed. He's deceased now. But I was lucky enough to go out, go stand-up paddleboarding with both of them. They taught me how to do it. So we went out in the bay in Southern California, and we went up stand-up paddleboarding. And then the last thing we did was we went, and he had made the artwork for this event that happens every year. It's like this birthday party for, I think it was Joey Ramone, one of the Ramones. Mm-hmm. And his wife is widowed, throws this party for him, like, you know, like they show movies in this. It's in the cemetery. It's called the Forever Hollywood Cemetery. And like, you know, hundreds of thousands, like 1,000 people might even show up. And they have food carts there. And like they're showing movies and bands play and blah, blah, blah. And so it's kind of this fun thing. So our episode was like all of this stuff to sort of show what this particular artist's life was. Somebody else, it could be completely different. And so people get a feel for who Shag is. And, you know, the idea was just to make it a show that was accessible and mm-hmm. interesting to the general public. But it was also informative. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we shot this episode. We made a sizzle reel. We shopped it around. And we didn't get picked up. Everyone's like, this is a great idea. But, like, we thought, this is a no-brainer. This is such a great idea. Mm-hmm. Not to say other people don't have this idea. But, you know, we did it. We put it together.
But you think that this got something to do because it's, you know, sort of art is difficult to sell as a theme? You might, I mean, it's...
You know, what we found...
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, not actually. You know, people, well, from what I understand, you know, based on our experiences with this, which was really interesting and illuminating, there's a whole bunch of reasons. Like, and since I've posted this, I now have people, we're talking to people again. And mm-hmm. that's why I posted it. And we made this over 2 years ago.
Yep.
So it's funny because you see me in that video and I'm like 60 pounds heavier than I am now because I lost all this weight, right? So it's like, well, we're going to have to reshoot that episode again. Because I'm like way skinnier. It would be weird to have this one episode and then suddenly there's a skinny version of me. What happened? But what we found, you know, we heard a lot of things. It was like you had to be right with the right production company. You had to have the right agent mm-hmm. or there wasn't enough conflict. You know, all sorts of – they're always looking for conflict in these reality TV shows or non-scripted television as they call it. So, you know, we – you know, and I was with a small production company and he had worked on a lot of shows. He has a show that he shoots, but he hadn't necessarily shopped a show around. So, you know, I kind of like was got, once we shopped around a while, nothing was really happening. I sort of like got focused on other things and I kind of forgot about it, which is crazy because, you know, I put so much time and energy into it. And then recently I thought to myself, we should repost this and put this out there so people mm-hmm. see what we worked on and maybe someone will be interested in it. So we now have people that we're talking to again about maybe.
I think all these things are pretty important to do these days. You know, I mean, it's the same with the podcast. It's the same with trying to find different media to promote art basically again in a way. I mean, when you talk to Shag, I mean, of course, he's well known. He's also, you know, sort of very successful, you know. But I think it's getting more and more important to actually have like a format of an hour or so where you actually are able to explain a little bit more in depth because, you know, we both talk about oversaturation and everything goes bam, 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 you know, sort of like you're basically shot at with information in single images right. all the time, but you don't look right. behind it. So media like that, you know, sort of should become more important. Producing it on your own and then selling, is that an option? No, it's too expensive, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of really like hustling it. So I'm back to hustling it again. And finding somebody who really believes in it, sees it. Now, the thing is, a lot of television networks, they know what works. They'll be mm-hmm. like, well, this doesn't work, that doesn't work. You just have to find somebody who they believe in the idea, they believe in you, they see me as a good host. Mm-hmm. If you don't see me as a good host, I was pitching myself in a very particular way instead of like having this like. My whole thing was like, I'm this accessible person that I'm relatable to. I'm not like some snooty fine art guy, and I'm working with artists that the work is accessible. Now, you know, once you get people involved, you can sort of really start to drill down and dig in and get into deeper things. You know, we could visit collectors, we could go behind the scenes of the art world, we could do all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, I think people are, it has to be entertaining for people, and it's got to be a good story. And so that's what they're looking for, I think. And again, you know, I'm not an expert in this. It certainly was an interesting experience, and I'm glad I did it so I can always – I wouldn't be like, well, I never tried that. I always had this great idea. I was going to do this thing, and I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. It occurred to me that if I had done it and it became successful, it would open up a whole bunch of other doors for me. And it was a move forward in what I was always trying to do, which was share art and make it accessible to people. Mm-hmm. Because it's not a priority on people's life. People would rather like see celebrities' big homes or whatever, you know. I mean, there's certain shows that like, there's so much reality television that most of it I just don't pay attention to. It doesn't interest me. I think it's garbage.
A lot of it is.
You know, but then there's some stuff that's really interesting. And then there's some stuff out there that's just a little bit too serious. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not the kind of show I want to make because that's not who I am. I wanted to have something that was fun and funny.
Well, it looked fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, ultimately maybe it would get people engaged in art more. I mean, I've seen mm-hmm. that. I was having a conversation yesterday, actually, with a woman in Jersey City, she's the head of the Jersey City Arts Council. Her name's Heather Warfel, and she's a dancer. And she teaches dance at a county art school, mm-hmm. Hudson. This is for Hudson County, I think. And we were just talking about dance because dance has become way more popular to the general public than it was like 10, 15 years ago. There's all these So You Think You Can Dance shows and things like that. Like street dance has become immensely popular. And it's because of these shows, which is kind of cool, I think. They've just made it really accessible. Whereas back in the day, you know, when we were growing up, dance was like jazz dance or ballet or modern or something that like people couldn't relate to. But the average public can now really relate to dance as a whole, b-boying, you know, break dancing. So that's kind of cool. So, I mean, I just think, you know, there's a market for it. It's interesting. So that was kind of, you know, that was the idea behind this. I just saw a lot of opportunities in it to collaborate. I love to collaborate with people. Yeah. And it would have been really cool to share these experiences, you know, that I have, like, for example, you know, I remember this one crazy experience. I mean, I've had so many wonderful experiences just from like coming out and say visiting you, and then we meet up with a bunch of people and we go and we have schnitzel. Yeah. I think we ate schnitzel because I asked to have schnitzel.
First time we met, we went to Erika's Egg, and there's definitely a good option that we had the schnitzel there because it's good.
Yeah, we were like in this place and it was like we were having, I'm having this German experience with these great, and we went around and looked at art and met people, mm-hmm. and it was just cool. And, but I was just thinking like how I flew down to Mexico and I did this show with this artist, Jason Dakaris Taylor, and he was creating these sculptures that he was putting underwater and creating these underwater sculpture parks. And he had this one in Cancun, mm-hmm. and it became a tourist destination. Like people would come down to dive and see. They go and they dive and see these underwater sculptures. So I go down, I stay with him in the. I go down and I actually stayed at one of those all-inclusive fancy places because mm-hmm. It was like the best. That's what they had down there, you know. Yeah. And he would like pick me up in this rickety truck, and you know, he'd pick me up and it'd be like the people there would see this guy drive up in this rickety like truck and pick me up at this fancy hotel. It was really funny, and he takes me out to. takes me to this diving school, and I learn. I take a two-hour scuba diving class, and they throw me in the ocean. I go scuba diving. I've never gone scuba diving before,
okay. And
I learn how to scuba dive, and I see this underwater sculpture park. I mean, that's kind of cool,
mm-hmm.
You know, to share that with people, to have people see that, like,
yeah.
You know, and we did. Ate great local Mexican food and like met other artists and talked about his process and how he casted people because he would cast actual people. That's what he was doing. And just like talk about that sculpture park, you know, like that was our episode. I just thought, well, that would be really interesting for people to see because it's just so crazy. Like this guy made a sculpture park underwater.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was kind of the idea behind the whole thing.
Yeah, it's I think sharing these stories and sharing sort of these moments with these artists and being able to go a little bit more in depth, that's because you told me quite a while, I think when you were producing that, you know, a few years back when you were producing the first episode, you were talking to me that's kind of a concept that you're trying to venture on. And so when I saw this, what was it, the sizzle reel?
Yeah, sizzle reel. Sizzle reel. S-I-Z-Z-L-E is what they call it.
Yeah.
It's like a commercial, basically.
Yeah, that was pretty good, and it's you know, super professionally produced. So I was kind of interested to know how you can actually get this for the public to see. I mean, there's so many things that we do that no one ever sees. You know, is going to see. And
well, you know,
and I think that there are a lot of stories that, you know, so the two of us, you know, of course can tell, but I mean, there's no better form than visual image than a film, you know?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were exploring all those options and, you know, again, it's from what I understand, people are making, you know, there's thousands of people pitching television.
Sure.
For, you know, be it for the internet or for, streaming television like Netflix, Amazon, etc., for HBO or cable channels. So like people they get inundated with material.
There's also a lot of platforms for content now. I mean, there's like tons of more platforms for content now through Netflix and all these channels, of course.
Yeah, that's right, but still they're getting so much, and you know, at the end of the day, it's got to bring in viewers, it's got to sell, you know, like they're, because it costs a lot of money to do that. Like, oh, why don't you produce it yourself? Well, you know, I think on the low end to produce one of these episodes where nobody's really even getting paid, it's like 20 grand with nobody getting paid at least.
Yeah.
And like, you know, if you're going to do a full season, you know, got to make a little bit of money because it's really time. Let's say you were going to do eight episodes.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to take at least 1 week episode. That's 8 weeks of my life, at least.
Yeah.
And that doesn't count for like going back in the studio and doing voiceovers and, and you know, on the end of the editing is like really, I don't know how many, you know, weeks it takes for someone to edit a video.
Sure.
And so it's actually like, and I could be off about this. It's just basically from what I understand. It could probably take longer than that. I'm being like very like conservative.
Mm.
It's you do 8 episodes. It's like at least 2 months or more out of your life. You think about travel, you know, add a couple extra days every time. You're like a quarter of your year.
Yeah.
So, well, and you know,
got to pay off in some way.
You know, there's people who are doing like big, longer seasons. Just think about how much of that time take up half their year.
But I believe that a lot of the things that we're producing these days are not, you know, so you will not be able to make money with it. I mean, look at this podcast, you know, that when there's a point when I, you know, at some point somebody wants to place advertisement on a podcast like this, I have to have thousands of listeners, and I have good numbers. I'm pretty happy. I'm still amazed how many people actually listen to this. Especially because I'm switching between German and English, and of course the Germans, probably most of them, can listen to both episodes, but that's it, you know.
Right.
And a lot of people always waiting for English episodes, but I will probably never see any money for this, what I'm doing. But I think it's very important to do this, you know, and to get the,
well, I,
get the word out about these things, about artists, about projects. I mean, this project with the film, that's why I actually, you know, so I told you when I saw the showreel, we have to talk about this, because I think it's something that the only way to push these things is when you tell people, you know. And maybe there's a lot of people now that say, okay, I'm going to look at this sizzle reel, or maybe I've seen it, and I want to see it. I mean, the thing is, you have so many interesting artists, but that you can actually meet. And when you look at somebody like Shag, and you look at his house, which you see in this reel, you know, so like, you know, sort of tiny portion of it, it's like you want to see more. You want to see and understand how, when you're a young person and you start to enter a career in arts, how, you know, sort of do you get to a point where you actually live your art? You know, that's probably what Shag pretty well, you know.
What does that look like? Because yeah, everyone would be different. You know, you go to a studio. I was thinking, I was at the studio I was in Texas recently. I did this show with Wynn Wallace, and you know, he's got this house in Austin, out in, you know, the suburbs, and he works out of his like barn in his backyard, you know. And it's not glamorous, you know. And people are like, oh, well, this, you know, you just see how everyone does things different. Like, you know, maybe you find out, like, you know, this, he is a working artist, but he doesn't make all his living off art. He also bartends. So it's like, well, this is what this guy does. But he also plays in all these bands, and he knows all these interesting people. And, you know, so like when I visited him, I had such a stimulating time, because like I was exploring a new town, and it had its own, you know, unique. You go to Austin, it's all about barbecue. And I like went to like an old honky tonk, like out in the middle of nowhere. There's barely anyone there, but they're playing country music all night, you know, and I'm just sitting there drinking whiskey. It was great. And, you know, it's, you get that local flavor, and you see through this artist, this creative person's eyes, which to me is really stimulating. I was fortunate in my life to have traveled all over the world, and all my experiences with all these creative people, and they were such, it was such an enriching experience every time.
Totally, yeah.
So, you know, for people to see that and go like, oh, here's one way I can do it. Oh, I can do it this way. I mean, Shag is like, he's like on steroids, like with his whole life, the fact he's so successful,
yeah,
he does really well. You know, he's well known. He makes good money. He's got this wonderful life. You know, then you find out he's got married, he's got kids, his kids are like, whatever, dad. You know, you see like that, that's kind of funny to share that. Like if you were to go to like Ron English's house, right, which is wacky. It's up in, in upstate New York, and I can't think of the name of the town. And, you know, I've known him for 25 years, and I've watched his kids grow up, and the relationship between him, his kids and him is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And because people have this idea about these artists, and their kids are always like, whatever, dad, you know, like, or his wife and that whole, you know, relationship. And it's like so funny to see those things and share those things. And like, I mean, I used to go over their house all the time when I was young, and Tarsa, his wife, she would like, their whole family situation was they always sit together and have dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she'd always cook dinner, like real American style, like, you know, we'd be eating like, you know, string beans, mashed potatoes, and a piece of chicken, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is Ron English, this really famous artist, but his family's like foremost. Like I was over his house recently, and it was like, who was, I think both his parent, his mother was there and Tarsa's mother was there, and we were hanging out with the kids, who are now like, I don't know, 22 and like 19. And like, we're all sitting around, and like, that's always been that way with those guys. And like, it's like not about Ron English being this famous guy, and he's got all these crazy like toys and shit all over the place. It's just about like this family dynamic. And I've literally known his whole family for 25 years, his parents, his sister. So like, I show up, I don't see him as much as I used to. I used to see him a lot when they used to live down here, and I would just show up in their studio when they were downtown, or their house in Jersey City. And Tarsus like, you kept staying over for dinner? I'm like, yeah. And we just sit around, we're just friends.
That's the interesting aspect. That's why so many people would like to see, you know, have an insight into how's this artist studio look like, you know, how are people, I mean, where does the inspiration come from? And I actually have a talk in, end of September here in Hamburg with an organization that's called Creative Mornings. It's like an early morning, 8:30 or so. You speak in front of people, and I've been invited to speak about a muse, inspiration, and stuff like that. And I think that is something that, you know, sort of you can find in these. In these, you know, sort of simple things, which are not simple things, having dinner with your family every day—that's also a kind of a—it's, you know, sort of not just routine; it's also discipline. We're trying to do that as well, you know. I mean, of course, Melvin is out of the house more or less, but the little one is there, and trying to find these moments where you sit together. And when my parents, for example, I mean, they live in Cologne, and I live in Hamburg, but when they're in Hamburg, they always try to come to Hamburg when we have an opening because they like to be at the openings at the gallery. And they, if you look through, if you look through the past 17, 18 years of Helium Cowboy and the photo album, they're, you know, sort of every year, at least one or two openings, they're there. And they've just been to an opening two, three weeks ago. And it's something where people, you know, sort of there's a connection to, it's not just me running a gallery and, you know, sort of and being distant or whatever. The family's there. My wife does the bar. You know, the little one is now entertaining other kids outside in the backyard, playing with them. And so when it comes to this whole thing, inspiration and what's behind it, people can start to understand so much better. And these days we're all trying to post beautiful pictures of what we're doing, of our work process, but it's just an image, right? You know, and nobody actually reads text anymore. And so like the medium like that we're using now, talking on a podcast or having like a film, being able to give people a chance to look into that. And whatever that is, like, it's perfect. It's the perfect description. It's same what, you know, sort of, I mean, Melvin is in my business now, at least for some time. And, you know, sort of, but it's always still, you know, still whatever.
Well, so that, you know, just like you, my family would come out, but you made me just think about, like, I love families, you know, it's hilarious to me. There's some artists I work with, they're like single and they work, and that's the whole single artist person who's run around partying, whatever.
Of course.
But then there's some that have families, and I was just thinking about, we're sitting around at Ron's table, and I drove up to his house, and he's got this giant house, it's in Beacon, and I noticed that when I got there that there was like, was it a snowblower? It was some, pretty sure it was a snowblower. And it was sitting outside and it was raining. And I was like, what the hell? It was brand new. And they were like, because I have the same damn snowblower, right? And I was like, what's up with the snowblower? And Tars is like, we're trying to like get our son. Now their kids' names are Mars and Zephyr, right? So this is Mars, so I've known these kids since they were born, you know. I knew him before they were born, you know. And he's like saying, hey, we're trying to get Mars to like take care, learn to take care of the property better and blah blah blah. So what's out there? I'm like, Mars, I'm just like busting his balls. I was like, that's a perfectly good snowblower or whatever. I don't know, I think it was a snowblower, not a generator. And I was like, what are you doing? You got to go out and you got to cover that, you know. It's like was this, and I was just like busting his balls, you know. But it was really funny though, and he's a really smart kid. But it was just like these funny experiences. That, so, and the thing about Ron is, he is completely engaged in his family, but and he's traveling constantly and he hustles. But he's got the thing I was going to get back to, such a hardcore work ethic, and all of these people.
Yeah.
Do they have their families? Like Shag's very involved in his family life, you know. I remember him coming, he was in New York. He came out, he came out to an opening. He had an opening. And a good friend of mine is a celebrity chef. Her name is Amanda Freitag. And I knew her before she was a celebrity chef. It was just, it's a fluke, you know. And so she would come out to the openings a lot. And they were super foodies. And they freaked out about Amanda Freitag. And at the time, his daughter was like 12. And she was like, they were really into food, and they would just like talk about all the food networks and everything. But it's just so funny because everyone's like, Shag, you know, he's a superstar, but yet they're geeking out on Amanda Freitag, who's like this food star, you know. So it was like, and it was really sweet to see this interaction and see his daughter, and just like you're always dealing with these artists in this sort of like you're promoting them like in the, as these like visual art, you know, they're these icons, these kind of famous, untouchable people. But then you're hanging out with them and their families, and it's not like that at all. And their kids, always take them down like five levels. It's hilarious, you know. It's like, as I enjoy your relationship with your son, you know, like you guys have a beautiful relationship, and I really enjoy that, you know. And I've spent time with, you know, you guys together, not enough, but so yeah, that's a cool thing. It's a cool thing to share with people, I think. That's all.
Actually, Melvin's podcast, I mean, I recorded a quick session with him and Jens on Monday, the week we started to install Jens' exhibition. They came at around 11 o'clock to the gallery. I set up my podcast equipment for three recording places. And then when they came, I said, okay, now guys, let's sit down. Let's talk about what's happening this week so people get an idea, you know, how's it like to set up a show, an exhibition? And what are your expectations? And what do you like about doing these things? And it's just like half an hour, 35 minutes talk.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's actually one of the most successful episodes that I've done so far. Which, I bet. You know, which of course has something to do with the fact that, you know, my podcast was promoted on iTunes heavily in Germany recently. But still, you know, so it's like it's these kids, when you give them the opportunity to develop themselves, they do great things. And Melvin, for example, has a great voice on the podcast. He wasn't expecting this, you know. He was like, "Oh, wow, nobody wants to hear me talk, and my voice is probably quite off, you know." But it's good, you know. So
they chip off the old block, just like his dad.
Yeah, yeah, he's a good guy. Wherever, you know, sort of his paths will lead him, you know. Now, I think he just wants to travel, go back to traveling after half a year traveling with his girlfriend around the world. I think the first thing you want to do, you come back, you want to pack your suitcase again and hop on the next flight out.
Yeah, well, especially when you're young, so
yeah, sure, yeah, of course. But I mean, I don't travel that much anymore to other artists or exhibitions, which I did sometimes. I think about, you know, so when I was still working with Iwapop in Barcelona, I was in Barcelona 2-3 times a year.
Yeah,
you know, hanging out with Boris and visiting shows and, you know, sort of taking artists over there, or the whole, you know, sort of in New York, being in New York so often and being in Miami. The good thing is you start to build a network. For example, I'm gonna have one of these next English episodes with Catherine Mikesell. She's from Miami, and she and her husband, they're collectors, but they're also like patrons of the art. They have a residency program, which has been running since I met her in 2006 in Miami, I think. And is now basically the main center of her work, and it's like, it's a big residency. Well, not a big residency, but it's a very important residency, and seeing how this can work. And so the network will be, and we're still in contact, you know, sort of. And so it's going to be just nice to touch base, but I'm not, now we do this over the podcast, you know, like the same, like we're now on a split screen seeing each other, but being, you know, sort of thousands of miles apart and time zones apart. But I think traveling is super important for the arts and for artists to actually get all these stories firsthand and then being able to tell them, you know, so.
But oh, yeah, you know, I mean, I feel like in the arts, if you're fortunate enough, you definitely want to travel. That was one of the most enriching, positive experiences in my life in terms of understanding people, understanding cultures. You basically, you know, like you and I are good friends as a result of this, you know, like that we're allowed to do this now because of technology and everything. And like, you know, we were doing it just at the time when people really started doing it. And it's sort of, you know, it's like now we're all like world citizens. We're not really, it's not like you're German, I'm an American. That's not how it is. You know, we're like part of the same tribe. We relate. Yeah. And we have friends like this all over the world. So it's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And to be able to share that is pretty cool too. So
did you ever, are you having plans on sort of, I don't know, on other formats than TV? I mean, the gallery or the Jonathan Levine Project is still doing a few shows. But is there anything that you plan on doing to, you know, sort of beyond that right now?
You know, I'm working on a couple projects. I'm kind of right now, limbo isn't really the word. I've pulled back. I've simplified. I'm selling secondary market work. I'm selling primary work. You know, my operations are much smaller, so it's less expensive to run. And I'm exploring things, and I just kind of some projects I'm interested in. I'm trying to, and I don't hopefully know, you know, I'm putting my ideas out there, but I'm working on creating a Halloween decoration company where I work with artists to design Halloween decorations.
Wow, that's really good.
And so that's something I'm working on. We'll see if it takes off.
Yeah.
I'm also interested in some real estate development in regards to the use working in the arts and real estate. It's something I've been interested in for a long time. And I've been working a lot with a guy named Christian Strike, who is like he's called a serial entrepreneur, but he's also a curator. He created that exhibition Beautiful Losers back, like, I don't know, 2004, 2005. He and I work on little projects. We've been doing some e-commerce stuff together. He's working on like a startup where he's creating a new platform. So just like a variety of different things. I'm kind of all over the place. Still working in the arts, but just looking at different ways, you know, new ways to move in it. And you know, like, it's like, I consider myself a creative entrepreneur. I mean, most people think of me as a gallerist, which in fact is what I have been most of this time. But at the end of the day, you know, you are, as well, I would call, we're entrepreneurs. I would say artists are even entrepreneurs. And so, you know, I'm just looking for new things, you know, trying new things. Like, this is the first time in my life where I haven't, not my first time in my life, I'm sorry. This is the first time in like 18 years where I haven't been on a schedule.
Yeah.
Because every 6 weeks I had an opening.
Yeah.
And for 18 years.
Yeah.
So like I was, you know, so now I can kind of explore other ideas. Now, I don't know where that's going to take me. I don't know. I mean, hey, you never know. I mean, it's just reopening the gallery, you know, and running a traditional gallery. I highly doubt it, but you never know.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I'm like burnt on it and kind of jaded on it because the whole system changed, I still like it. I like lots of, you know, I'm still excited by it, but, you know, at the end of the day, if it's not like lucrative enough, it's not financially stable enough, I can't put my focus in it like that anymore. So, you know, these are some of the things that I'm working on, I'm thinking about. I'm not really sure where I end up. You know, I have like a pop-up show coming up with Dylan Egan. I've got a couple online shows happening. You know, I'm approaching this just as any creative was. Let's see what opportunity comes out of it. Like, I have a lot more creative freedom, but you don't know what you're going to get from me.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, that's cool by me. I don't want to know. I'm just like, let's just kind of see what happens. It's a, it, there's a, the silver lining of not owning a gallery anymore is, or in a traditional sense, is that it's given me a lot more creative freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of things to figure out these days, I think. And you know, if you have the time and you sort of like you don't have this super tight schedule, which you simply have when you run a gallery, there's so much to do continuously all the time. Then it can be pretty helpful to think about, you know, what, where this is all going to go. I mean, with me, for example, it's like I'm not saying that I'm never going to do exhibitions again, but I will definitely. Right now, I'm focusing on other things, which I think are much more important for me. But also, you know, like the podcast is an extension of what I did earlier as in with artists. You know, I mean, if I have, you know, if I talk I just had an interview last week with an artist that I was representing 3-4 years ago, and she's we split, but not for bad reasons, just because I thought, you know, so she has to make her own different experiences. Now we just met and she made different experiences and is, you know, so kind of reinventing herself, and that was a super interesting talk. And this is probably more helpful for her, for her career and for her acceptance as an artist, having this talk with me, then if we do like a show where maybe 500 people come and maybe 3 people buy, But it's a different perspective that you have to look on. I had a talk with Harlan Levy recently, who has established a gallery in Brussels. He never wanted to do a gallery. The first gallery he came in contact with was mine years ago, and we became friends. And he really appreciated what I was doing. And basically, he also says that in that podcast, I changed his perspective on how he looked at galleries, because he never went into galleries because it was just posh places that he didn't think he'd fit in and he'd be even interested in. And when he saw that it can be different, that it can be rebellious, that it can be rock and roll and more fun and, you know, not too serious all the time, but still make build careers for young artists, Sov changed his mind. And now he's actually doing a very, very, I mean, He now has a big gallery, which he never thought he'd have, you know, so being on Brussels, on Arco and all these things, and doing the circus that he never thought he'd be doing, you know. And when I spoke to him, you know, sort of, he said he changed a lot of things so that he can actually work. One of the major parts for his work is that he only works with artists that are part of the team, that understand this as a team, that come to the fairs and help him set up the booth, that come taking things down, that come during the day, that they support. It's a support network. The only way you can actually survive, you know, as a gallery and things like that. Yeah, so doing it different. People are looking at the whole gallery business right. Different. I personally think it's a great time that we started these conversations, because even though it wasn't very much off the record today. We didn't complain a lot. We were not whining at all. I think we were pretty positive today. I think it's interesting also to see, like, when this is like the seventh time we speak, let's see, ninth, 10th time. Maybe you know what lies ahead. Maybe we, you know, during the course of time that we're talking now for many more months, we actually accompany these changes that are definitely needed, you know?
Well, you know, I was, as you're saying all this, I guess, you know, I think of you as, you know, you're a visual artist, you work as a visual artist, mm-hmm. but, you know, you're also a galler. So, and I get who you are. I don't know mm-hmm. how other people perceive you.
Yeah.
But my perception of people, the way people perceive me, and probably the way also, well, not completely, you know, I identified as a gallerist. But, you know, if you know me and you follow me at all, you also know, like, I'm just kind of this wacky dude, and compared to most gallerists, and I play music and mm-hmm. whatever, and that I'm a creative. And, you know, I went to art school. So, but I ended up being a gallerist, and I don't necessarily want to be a visual artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I play music all the time, as you know. I'm playing actually in a second band now. And I started a dance punk band. That's another story.
Okay.
But, you know, that's a creative outlet for me. But there was this whole thing that used to drive me crazy, is like the artists would have their show. They do really well, whatever. And they're like, I'm going to take 3 months off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just, you know, they're always like, yeah, I'm going to explore this. I'm going to explore that, blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you, motherfucker. I wish I could do that. Like, do you realize that I can't do that? Do you realize that I have to do this 18-year fucking grind?
Sure.
There's no, like, I get time to explore and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, like, taking off and I'm exploring, finding out I need to grow creatively. I need to change creatively
yeah.
if I want to be happy
mm-hmm.
and do it on my own terms. I don't want to be stuck in the – I don't want to be stuck in a box of – this gallerist, this is who you are. And I felt really trapped in a lot of ways
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, I was really fortunate though. I had a great staff and I had a lot of freedom and this, that, and the other thing. And it was an amazing experience, but I also would just burn out on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not feeling as fulfilled as I wanted to. It had become too much about commerce. And it was not about me, which mm-hmm. it wasn't supposed to be about me, but it wasn't enough about myself, you know, like, well, why am I doing this? Especially if, like, people aren't really appreciating it enough and I'm making all these sacrifices and taking all these risks for, you know, artists that, you know, they're just kind of like, they come and do their show and then they're gone. And, like, they're nice, you like them, but they don't really fully understand what it is you're sacrificing.
Yep.
And, you know, the risk you're taking and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I can bitch and moan about that all day. But, you know, I still said to kind of sit back and go like, well, you know, I did that and I did that for myself too, to an extent. But now, like, what do I do? Like, maybe I want to try something else, you know, and I'm not old, but I'm not young. So, you know, I'm 50. What are you, 51?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, your life has changed. You know, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I ran around. I did that. I had fun. I had great experiences. I, like, you know, fed my ego. You know, mm-hmm. I partied a lot. It was exciting. It was great. But I don't need to do that anymore. And I just, you know, I'm trying to find out where I go next. Because at the end of the day, I think the same with you and the same with most visual artists is that you have to live, you know, people say this all the time and they're so inauthentic when they say it. But you have to live your life authentically. You know, everyone's like, I'm living my most authentic life, blah, blah, blah. Fuck you.
Yeah.
What a load of shit. Because everyone's just saying that now. And it's just like, that's definitely, now you could put that on there, but that's like definitely off the record. Let's get a little whiny. I see that all the time. Like, give me a break. I mean, like, I have to live authentically where I have to live, you know, in the way that's going to make me happy. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of sacrifice that goes with that. I just can't go out and get a job. Mm-hmm. And I can't just continue doing something because it's making money or not, whatever. You know, it's like, I have to believe and love my life just like you do. Mm-hmm. And I know you're like that. You're just like me that way. And like, you're doing it on your own terms. And, you know,
but you know,
sometimes you got to make a change.
One thing why, I mean, of course, I've been neglecting my own personal art for many years, putting everything in front of that with the gallery and all these things. It's fine. I changed that. But I'm still juggling so many balls and I'm still having Helium Cowboy and I'm still doing the occasional show and I still feel responsible for some artists. And I'm still, you know, making money with selling artwork, of course. But when one of the reasons, of course, you know, I need to do this book. I need to focus on my work. I need to get my work out more. Also, I'm a successful artist in that respect that I can live off my artwork that I'm selling, and I have great collectors and supporters. But still, there's, you know, sort of I still work too hard and work too much, and certain things, you know, sort of they just come short, you know, And I also don't want to just work as a visual artist alone. That would not be enough for me. You know, like with Jens, for example, taking Jens again as an example, or other artists, we both know so many artists who are painting constantly. They're always creating new work and it's great, but that's not for me. I don't have to get up every morning and make a new artwork. I want to make work when I want to make the work. You know, when there's a need, a personal need, when I have the drive, when I feel inspired.
So can I interject?
Yeah.
Can I interject? You're completely living your life the way you want to on your own terms. You know, you could sit and complain and say things came up short.
No.
But you know how many people would love to be living your life? You always look like you're having fun. And in fact, I think you are having fun.
Yeah.
Not to say life is not, you got to have challenges.
That's all fine, but that's not even what I wanted to say. And yes, I mean, you have to be willing to work very hard, though, you know. So, but yes, I'm living the life that I want to live, and I make less and less compromises. I've always been good at not making compromises, but I'm making less and less compromises the older I get. But one thing I actually wanted to say was that one of the reasons why I'm not really interested in doing exhibitions anymore is because I grew tired of doing exhibitions. I'm at the opening. And it's a nice show and we did all these things and I'm at the opening and it's nice and we, you know, sort of you talk to people and you sell some work. But that's the moment when I feel really tired. I've done so many exhibitions and I think something is missing that really gives me a kick to do that again. It has to be a really, really great exhibition. But that is, if you do those things, I mean, super exciting shows, you need money, you need time, you need, you know, But if I make regular exhibitions, I'm happy that it all works out nicely. And it's I'm standing there sometimes thinking, I'm tired of this.
I mean, after if you've been doing it long enough, I've been doing it for 25 years.
That was off
years.
The record, by the way.
Was it off no, the record? No. You know, if you've been doing it for, yeah, off the record. No, I think it's okay to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
you've been doing
of course.
It, you know. I'm doing this 25 years and, you know, at some point it's a grind and you need a break. Like anyone needs a break from anything. It's supposed to be creative. It's supposed to be new and different. But when you're doing the same thing over and over again and you're just like, it's like a machine, it gets tiring. And you know, I was excited about it. I had a great run, you know, and I was starting to get tired of it a while ago before like the market started to bottom out. But you know, it's what I did. And I was committed to these artists and they were dependent on me and I had staff dependent on me, blah, blah, blah. Maybe I should have got out sooner, but you know, it's what I did. It's the life I led. But yeah, sometimes it's just time to make a change, you know? And I think anybody, artists may not want to hear this, but I think anybody in that position is going to get tired of the grind. Anything that's continuously the same, you know, that's, and unfortunately you have rent, you have to continually make program. If you didn't have to make programming all the time, you work with artists when you wanted to, and it was exciting for you and you enjoyed it. And that's what we're both trying to do at this point, not have to do it every 6 weeks for 18 years straight, you know, like that's just like mind numb. It's crazy to be like, oh, I don't have to worry about like my weekend. Like I don't have to work on the weekend anymore if I don't want to. I don't have to worry about is do I have an opening and do I have a dinner before that and all that crap every 6 weeks. At one point I was running two spaces. I had three fucking shows every 6 weeks. It was crazy. And it was exhausting. And I was getting the life sucked out of me. And I couldn't really, it was too much. And I couldn't really have my heart in it, you know, because I was, when something gets too big like that, sometimes, you know, it becomes too much about running and managing a business, managing employees, you know, it's a, you start to lose your, you lose yourself. It can't happen. You know, it's, these are the compromises. So it's understandable, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I
hope better to do things when you're excited about them than, and if you're in a situation where you can do that, you can work on projects when you want to work on projects because you're making enough money and you're doing it on your own terms. That's the dream for me at this point.
Yeah.
I could babble on about this forever, but.
Well, that's a good point. Good finishing point for this episode too, I think. Unless there's something else you want to.
Yeah, I just think, you know, it's kind of cool that we talked about this evolved into like, hey, you know, we can do, everyone can do something else.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to take a break. You need to try new things. You need to make radical change.
Yeah.
You as a creative individual, like, you know, we've all known people who are painters and not painters anymore. They weren't painters and they became painters, or people who changed life and jobs. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Sometimes things stop working. Sometimes just trying to make a change. Sometimes things will be better than you even imagined.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's part of being a creative individual. So,
yeah.
That's what I have to say about that.
Yeah. Okay. Jonathan. Looking forward to number 8.
So this was number 7?
Number 7, yeah. 7th time. Right. We started last year in December. What was the first one? November, December. So it's a good rhythm you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Let's keep it up. And let's get your TV show out of the doors.
Yeah. Please, anybody out there, big network, small network.
And I mean, who could actually not like you as the host? Seriously.
Well, of course I feel the way about myself, but you know.
Yeah, what are they looking at? I mean, there's not many people that have that experience and have that humor and are capable, able to speak freely in front of a camera and do not mind to jump off a pier onto a paddleboard and fall into the water.
That's right.
You know? I mean,
yeah, when I was 220 pounds, 5'4", my big belly and my man boobs.
Yeah.
You got to be able to make fun of yourself.
Of course.
You know, so.
Of course. All right.
But, all right. Well, you know what I have to say now?
I know.
Choose. By the way, should we tell people what that, why I say that? People, Germans know that. English don't, English speaking people don't know that.
Okay. No, you, no, no.
We think about it.
Elaborate.
Well, when I went to Germany, I've been to Germany like 10 times at this point in my life. When people would say goodbye, they'd go, choose.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a German word.
It's a German thing.
It's just a,
Choose.
So that's why I say it into this 7th episode, explain to people, choose.
Yeah.
goodbye now. That was a song from the debut album of Jonathan's band, Cyclone Static.
That is true. Wow. That is some good research.
Head.